Yes, hello, good evening. It's a great pleasure to be here tonight. I have been living in Basel for the last 14 years. Before that, I lived in the U.S. for 17 years, and I'm originally, can't see you here, so originally from Germany. So if I speak in an awesome kind of way to talk about all the great things technology is bringing us, that's my American piece, 17-year-old, and if I am very perfect, that's my German piece. And if I try to avoid all risk, that's my Swiss piece. I'm just kidding. We'll get back to that. But I just want to say, if I speak about Switzerland, I'm speaking with my Swiss passport, which I've just acquired 2 years ago. So I'm speaking as a Swiss citizen. If I speak about Switzerland, forget the German citizen for that. So first of all, what is a futurist? The word doesn't really exist in German. In English, futurism, futurologist, in French, la prospective, which is actually quite a good word. Really what I do is I don't predict things, I observe. And so a big symbol for me is listening to what is going on. Most of you could do my job if you didn't have another job. In other words, what I do is I look at 2020, mostly 5 to 7 years, and I work backwards to figure out how companies can reinvent to be ready for that future. I give an example. 5 years ago, we had a big seminar with lots of CEOs from the car business in Germany. You may guess who that was. And we said, basically, what is happening, electric car, self-driving car, car sharing, new batteries, right? And 5 years ago, what we got from the audience was laughter. Right? Today, the number one initiative of every single car company in the world is electric cars, shared cars, self-driving cars, assisted, you name it, right? So the future of cars is not cars. The future of cars is mobility. So that is a huge shift when you think about that. So it's really good to observe that. And my company, The Futures Agency, is based in Basel and in San Francisco. And our motto is, it wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. This is very important to remember. You must look at the future even when the present is still going well. In fact, that's the perfect time to spend 3 to 5 to 8% of your time looking at future scenarios. Let me start here with this. You know that, of course, from your daily experience, we're living in a world of exponential technological change. Do you remember the paperless office, right? When was that? 15 years ago, right? Paperless office, we finally are getting the paperless office. It's finally actually happening using mobile devices. It took a lot longer, but when it happens, it's much bigger. And we are now at the takeoff point of the exponential technological curve. That means we're not at 1, we're not at 4, the next leap is 8. Moore's law, you may be familiar with that, right? Basically, if the car industry, for example, again, if they would have developed in the same way as computers have developed and firepower and horsepower, right, we would have to fill up the car once in its entire lifetime for gas. Right? That's how fast computers have developed. Now, there are people saying that by 2027, the human brain will be matched by a computer brain, by one computer brain equally, called the singularity. By 2050, one computer can have the capacity of the entire human mankind in brains, in processing power. Right? That's what exponential means. So now we're looking at scenarios where IBM, for example, just launched this thing called the neurosynaptic chip, right? Which is essentially a chip mirrored on the neural network of the brain. Right? Unthinkable just a little while ago. Now we're living in a world where science fiction is becoming reality. This could be a real nightmare, or real heaven, depending how you look at it. Science fiction, for example, the other day I was in Japan. I use an app called Say Hi, and I can speak in real time with the Japanese sushi chef in Japanese by speaking German into the app. You should try it. It costs $2. We had a half-hour conversation in real time, the guy speaking into the app and I speak out of the app, so to speak. In real, that's science fiction. So it's mind-boggling, all the things that are happening here. We're at the pivot point and the velocity of change. Take one of my old clients, Nokia. I'm afraid I couldn't help them. Somebody here from Nokia? I hope not. So anyway, I'm still very fond of Nokia, even though I would never use their phones right now. But You see what happened with Nokia in terms of velocity? How quickly the iPhone killed the whole idea of Nokia owning market share. Today, yesterday, Microsoft wrote off the entire investment in Nokia, $7.9 billion, right? Yesterday. You're looking at this chart here, right? The market share of Nokia. And how did that happen? Well, one of the big reasons was because they did not want to see 5 years into the future. This is one of the things that we're seeing here. It's very easy to say now, and it's not so easy to just point a finger. Right? But I mean, looking at this, its velocity is mind-boggling. Are you guys familiar with Airbnb? Right? It's a service where you can rent rooms like eBay for rooms, basically. Right? Airbnb has, as of yesterday in Zurich, 1,750 flats for rent at a cost of between 10 and 50% of hotels in Zurich. Airbnb is a startup from San Francisco. It's worth more money than the entire Hyatt and Hilton hotel chains together, right, in 3 years. Whether they can sustain that, I don't know. Maybe it's just hot air, but I like using them. There you go. That's they own nothing, a database, right? So we're entering the era of real-life science fiction, and you must be ready for this. Right? You cannot sit here and say, well, you know, we wait and see and observe, because in the warp speed era, you can't do that. The Swiss principle of wait and see and then do better has worked fine until now, right? Basically. But now we have to think about what happens here. Skype has automatic translation built in, starting with the next release. You can speak Skype in German, and it comes out in Chinese in real time. The self-driving car. I mean, assisted driving will be a reality. Nanobots in our bloodstream fixing our cholesterol. Science fiction? Nope. People are working on that. Lots of companies. Right? Brain-computer interfaces, controlling things with your brainwaves by thinking. Also science fiction? No longer. Holographic, augmented reality, looks like it's for geeks, right? In 5 years, normal. Just wait, I'll have some more stuff on that later. Robotics, automation. I mean, these things are straight from things like Minority Report and others, and bionic body parts. I mean, 3D printing for body parts and all. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Every single company in the Bay Area in San Francisco and Silicon Valley right now is inventing one thing only, and that is artificial intelligence. Google has acquired 27 companies that create artificial intelligence mechanisms, deep learning, language processing, because in a few years, there's no more search. It's all artificial intelligence searching for us. I'll have more examples. That will change businesses completely. Here's an example. Amazon just launched this box called the Echo. It has an artificial intelligent agent inside that does work for you.
Echo is a device designed around your voice. Simply say Alexa and ask a question or give a command.
Alexa, how many tablespoons are in 3/4 cup?
3/4 cups is 12 tablespoons.
Echo is connected to Alexa, a cloud-based voice service, so it can help out with all sorts of useful information right when you need it.
To me, it's, you know, bringing technology.
Another example from Japan. This is not a joke, right? These companies, and there's 84 of them now, apart from these two, right? They say that these machines are our companions, right? It's not a robot, it's a friend. God knows what else they will do, you know, you can only estimate. But think about that for a second. Right? Now you're talking to Siri on your iPhone and asking Siri to send an email or something, right? Very soon, you can ask Siri to go and do market research for you. and say, how did my product do today? How many people bought it? How many clicks? What is the sentiment in the market right now for this stock? That's already possible. That's where it's going. 2020, we have complete virtual and augmented reality integration. You see a doctor here operating with the Oculus Rift. That's already reality. So imagine if you're at a trade show, you can wear 3D glasses and you can see all the information about the booth and the other people and use face recognition and all these things. That sounds very geeky now. Becomes as normal as SMS. I'm not saying it's a good thing. Personally, I think it would be socially quite disruptive, right? But imagine if the police had this, right? I mean, they could see all of your stuff when they pull you over on their glasses, right? And of course, they want one. Like everybody at the NSA wants five of these. So now you have applications of augmented reality that become very cheap. This thing, pretty soon to be released by the Oculus Rift, essentially will cost around $200. This will be used by doctors, firemen, policemen, check-in people, hotel people, airline people, delivery people. Not for dinner, you know, with your friends, obviously, right? But so basically superimposing the reality on top of what you see. Microsoft is essentially inventing themselves by a product called HoloLens, which does exactly this. And it's geared towards businesses. So what we're seeing here, a little bit premature on this, is a complete merging from technology from outside to inside. Remember the mainframes, desktops? Remember, anybody remember desktops? Yes, they still exist. Right. Now the mobile, and very soon an implant. Right? Glasses on our eyes, basically a contact lens with internet access, already possible, too expensive. Right? Do we really want that technology to go inside of us? I mean, we're in the anybody have an Apple Watch here? Yeah? Apple Watch, anybody? Okay, I'm looking to get one, but it's definitely a weird thing, right? Transferring your mobile onto your wristwatch and then constantly interacting with it like it was a person, basically. Right? Imagine where that could take us. This is a chip you can implant to transact in a restaurant in Miami Beach. You can go to places and just because you're basically naked in a swimming suit, right? You don't have money, you don't have a phone, right? You use this to pay. Just scan with a chip and so you can be at the nude beach, I suppose. But human augmentation, right? I mean, this whole idea, that's all basically moving into our future. Now, what's happening here is you know very well from your daily work, of course, we're entering the age of hyperconnectivity. Right? Always connected, high speed, cheap devices, all information in the cloud. You know, cloud computing is now basically a fact despite security problems, despite the NSA, despite all of that stuff. Everybody needs to go into the cloud because it's 90% more efficient. Right? It's brutally more efficient. And we have to solve those problems. But hyperconnectivity is everywhere. And that changes our entire world, some for the bad and some for the good. Obviously, addiction, right? Addiction to being connected is a problem. Right? Dependency. I was, the other day, I was in London with a taxi driver, and the guy did not find his way without the GPS, right? He could not even go around the corner without a GPS, right? I mean, that's not good. So then we have things like this, you know. We have the movement against being connected. Did you know there's already four hotels in Switzerland that charge extra so you cannot go on the internet? Right? You can be in the moment. This is my screensaver for my iPhone. Right? When I switch my iPhone on, I have a screensaver rotating that gives me a message, you know, do I really need to do this right now? And Nokia, talking about Nokia, has a campaign they launched 2 months ago called Making Tech Human. And I'm using it here because it's one of the key themes of today. You have to use technology, you have to improve using technology, but it has to be human. Right? The purpose of business is humanity. In fact, you could go further and say the purpose of business is happiness, right? To make customers happy. So it cannot be run entirely by algorithms, as some are proposing. The Internet of Things. Cisco is saying that within 5 years, we're going to have 300 billion devices connected to the Internet. Cars, sensors, traffic lights, trees, airplane engines, you name it. Imagine what that would be like if your energy system was connected to the internet, your car was connected to the internet, your wristwatch, right? Security would be a major issue here, right? Because you could potentially become naked. So what's happening here is then, and again, this is a good thing and a bad thing, is we're moving into a world of social, mobile, analytics, cloud, and ultimately the biggest thing, an intelligent cloud. Remember Google Translate 5 years ago? You type in German and you want to translate into Thai or something, you only get gibberish, right? You get nothing. Today, that problem is being solved. Cloud is becoming intelligent. In fact, now we're getting what's called super intelligence in business, you know, sentiment analysis. Very soon, in 2 or 3 years, one person can do the market analytics jobs of 100 people today using software, for example, IBM Watson. That's going to change marketing companies, agencies, research, focus groups, in good ways and in bad ways. But basically, you can see that here in television advertising, but this is more relevant even, right? I mentioned the Google car before, autonomous car sales. Did anybody even know what an autonomous car is? You know, a car 2 years ago? Nobody knew about that, right? Look at the numbers here. That's millions, right? 100 million self-driving cars. So that's basically what's happening. Two major factors here. One, everything that can be automated will be automated. If you have a job that can be automated because you're doing repetitive, algorithmic, mathematical, fact-based things, it will be automated. And it is being automated. Call centers, right? We're talking about 100 million people here. 95% of call centers in 10 years will be done by software. Complete automation. That's good news for the companies using the calling center, right? But not good for the people that work there. And the other thing is intelligence. Systems are becoming so intelligent that we will depend on them like it's our own brain. There's a call center example. That's the future, call center manager. And if you've seen the movie Her, anybody seen the movie Her? Right? At the end of the movie, it's a guy falls in love with his operating system. Right? At the end of the movie, the guy asks the computer, the machine, they have become a couple, they have virtual sex. And then he says, so how many people do you currently engage in the same way, right? And she says, 4,847 at this moment. Right? Right? Exactly like this. This is the future of call centers. So what's also happening is you heard about artificial intelligence, which I'll talk about later. But basically, what's much more relevant is intelligent assistants. Using technology for customer relationships, right? Purchasing, ordering, amplifying what humans do. Right? That's why I turned this around, right? IA, not AI. You see a graph here from the FT saying, well, we'll basically have a market size of $8 billion for intelligent assistance. Every major financial company in the world, from Schwab to the big credit card companies, are building software engines that can replace people, that can run your portfolio. If you're in the banking business, you probably know what I'm talking about, right? Whether that's a good idea or whether that actually works. But what we're seeing here is ambient computing, you know, and basically computing that's everywhere. We don't even know it's there because it's in the cloud. We're able to make predictions. Prediction engines are widely used now. Prediction engines for how much you're going to sell, at what time, and that technology will be perfected by the likes of Cisco and IBM and many others. You've seen the movie Minority Report, right? They're called the precogs, the precognitives, right? They can anticipate things. That is actually becoming a reality in the sense that you can use market data in real time. We're not talking about 50,000 or so. We're talking about 800 million feeds, right? Large feeds to predict and to analyze. Becomes a new standard. What will that do for people? Well, the answer is, in a nutshell, I'll talk more about that later, we're going to move up the food chain. We're going to actually become more human because these kind of jobs will be taken. And that's my hope, at least. We can debate later if that is actually going to happen, but Our good friend Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, you remember Facebook? You know the Facebook, yeah? He put $200 million into this company called Vicarious. And check out the headline, right? We're building software that thinks and learns like a human. This is the number one priority of every tech company in the world. So that will change our lives completely. The intelligent cloud, some people call that the global brain. Right? Basically, everything that we've ever done, that we ever know, that we've ever looked at, is in a way contained in the cloud. And this started with music. Remember that, 1999, Napster? Anybody remember Napster? Yeah. So we said, 1999, I was there in San Francisco at that time, and Sean Fanning, who started this, said, well, music is moving to the cloud. And everybody said, what is the cloud? Right? Music is in the cloud now. And you know what the consequence of that is? If you subscribe to Spotify or now Apple Music, 10 francs a month, 18 million songs. Think back 10 years ago, one CD, 25 francs. Right? We're talking about 99.9999% margin erosion. Right? I mean, this is a big deal for the music business. Right? So what happened here in the cloud is that we have to invent new business models. When things move to the cloud, they get cheaper. They become a commodity to some degree. Right? And that is happening with banking, insurances, energy, sooner or later, transportation. When you are able to take an Uber car, you guys know Uber, right? The taxi service is highly contentious right now, but when you take Uber in San Francisco, you can call a service called Uber Pool, which is even better. You go together in a carpool on demand, and the price is 1/10 to 1/20th of a taxi because you're pooling up, right? So calculations have shown if you had 9,000 Uber cars in New York City, and if you could automate them, you could kill all the taxis. You could cover all of New York with 9,000 coordinated Uber cars and not with 148,000 taxis. And you would be quicker and cheaper. So mind-boggling changes coming there. This graph shows the economic impact of all that stuff. Automation of knowledge work, robotics, autonomous vehicles. Right? It's just a mere $30 trillion. And you think this is bad, this is actually very good news, right? I mean, the bad news is that it could be abused, of course, right? That we would have privacy problems and become naked and become unprotected and have cyber warfare and so on, yes. But think about the potential of this, right? To be efficient, to optimize, to lower prices. I mean, not just that, but in general. So what all that stuff does is basically totally reframing customer relationships. You no longer have control over your customer. It's very hard to do that to the customer now. Music industry, first. Film and television, Netflix, right? Second. Books, publishing, magazines. Now banking is next. Pharmaceuticals are next. After that, transport, education. Right? Same thing. So basically, the future is kind of a total customer empowerment. At the same time, of course, you do have those large places like Google that have become the new superpowers. Right? So they kind of ape this. You know, they kind of try to copy this a little bit. But what we see here is, looking at this graph, in a very interesting, Walmart is actually now, Facebook has, as of last week, become worth more than Walmart. So you can say connecting people makes more money than selling stuff. That's a strange thing, right, when you look at this. I mean, this is a really big, huge global company. Right? Facebook has a mere fraction of their employees. Is that real? Right? Basically, what we're seeing here is platforms are becoming extremely powerful. And also, in terms of buying, it's not all about interaction before transaction. People want to talk. People want to connect. So that's really changing everything. For example, General Electric has a great strategy of using this new marketing idea of creating and co-creating and curating content based on their story. And GE is a huge global company. This is the Instagram feed here from them. And they explain things about these technologies in social media. It's a very powerful mechanism of creating and co-creating. So here's the story. I mean, all of us are in business, right? Basically, all of us are now becoming storytellers, or many of us have been storytellers, and publishers and broadcasters. Doesn't matter what business you're in. B2B, especially B2B, right? You have to have a good story. If you don't have a story, nobody will care about you in the future. And it's no longer about media telling stories, right? Basically, it's all about that, as this guy says, the marketing organization will be about content, data, and technology. So what happens here is that all of a sudden in this world where we have a lot of noise, what we do in terms of marketing and how we talk to people, right, it's a lot less about talking to the world than getting the world to talk. So you talk to your marketing people or to your people who do public relations, and it's all about getting the world to talk about you. And that is really shifting how we create signals. For example, Tesla is the best example of this, right? Tesla has gotten the world to talk about this, and even though they are too expensive, they're experimental, they lose money, right? Tesla has sold twice as many cars as the top five luxury brands in the U.S. last year. And what they do now is they go from cars to batteries, Hyperloop transportation system, energy grids. So this is a really interesting story as to how they are achieving this. The other point is that we're now entering a world that is becoming abundant. Überfluss in German. It's kind of a hard word to explain. But basically, this is a slide from Peter Diamandis, who wrote a book called Abundance that you may want to read. And basically what he's saying is that because of digital, things are becoming abundant. Here's an example. Spotify makes music abundant. Netflix makes it possible for us to watch 160,000 movies for 9 francs a month, or even less. Right? Uber makes it possible for us to drive for almost free. I didn't even mention Skype on here, which makes phone calling free, right? Financial advisors make complicated financial advice free, and the 3D printer prints my shoes and my iPhone cover for free. And the list goes on and on. So what happens here in the future is that we're reaching a certain point, some people say about roughly 20 years, where everything will become abundant, just like music has become abundant. And then we have to think about what that means for our business. So at that point, we have to think about, you know, basically, when we reach abundance, we have to question how our economic logic works. And that's already starting to happen. You may have read the book by Piketty called Capital. It's only 700 pages, but you know, for the weekend you can read this. Well, he talks about exactly this, right? So we have to think about where that is going to take us. This picture shows abundance. Right? We're the bunny, right? The rabbit who's sitting there. Lots of possibilities. Think about that for a second, right? If you're going to watch a movie tonight, right? If you're not completely backwards, or you know, you haven't been around for a while, you will have so many choices, right? You can do BitTorrent, you can do Popcorn Time, you can do Hulu or Netflix or the BBC iPlayer or whatever technology you have, right? You have limitless choices. You want to fly somewhere on the weekend, right? From Switzerland, you can go to like 300 destinations for between 50 and 100 Swiss francs if you book in time, right? It's abundant. Just like EasyJet figured out how to make more money, not from flying, but from rebooking and packages, right, and baggage and car rental, we have to figure out what we do when things become abundant. This is a huge problem for publishers. Any publishers here? Magazines, newspapers, yeah? Okay, already don't have time to come here because they have to fix their business. But this is a real problem, right? You have to think about that, I mean, probably in all businesses. So Kevin Kelly from Wired Magazine said this, 20 years ago, when copies are free, talking about the music business, right? You need to sell something that can't be copied. When your product becomes cheaper, like telecom, for example, if you're in the telecom business, calls, data, networks, prices dropping, roaming dropping, right? What else will you do to create value? That's crucial, right? Because basically that's why I want to amplify it a little bit here. Right? Figure out what can't be copied. What makes you unique? In fact, talking about what I do, this year, for the first time, there will be a TED conference. You know TED conferences where people talk, you know, about saving the world and making lots of money. TED conferences, will now, for the first time, have a robot give a talk, right? A robot. I don't think that's much of a difference compared to some of the TED Talks, but still, you know, it just has to promise vast things and change, and then it will be fine. My friend Ross Dawson from Australia put this slide together that you can download later. We're going to share the presentation on my website, which is futurewithgert.com. This slide shows what's happening in news, and it has a great lesson for us, right? To become indispensable, we have to do things that cannot easily be copied. Looking at this rather complicated slide, right? If you're a newspaper or a publisher, you have to say, well, people may not pay for the content, the so-called paywall, right? But they would pay maybe for a different interface or a nice-looking app or extra volumes of databases. Like The Economist. Anybody know, subscribe to The Economist, right? I subscribe to The Economist for $150 a year, and I throw away the printed edition as soon as it comes into the garbage, right? Recycle, right? And why is that? Because I'm listening to The Economist on my iPhone. I'm listening to it when I'm driving. That's why I subscribe. I would never subscribe to The Economist if it wasn't for the interface. Even though the writers are great, I would not pay the money, right? I pay because of the interface, but would I pay if the writer sucked? Obviously not. So it's very important to think about for the future, what can you add in terms of value, whether you're in insurance business or banking business or hospital or hotels, what can you add that makes it sticky? That is a key question. So when you get home tonight, think about that, you know, how can I add value rather than always focusing on the one value I have or the two values I have? Becoming like oxygen. I can guarantee you, if you don't become like oxygen in the near future, people will forget you. I was this morning at the Swiss television workshop about the future of the Swiss broadcasting. And that's basically what I said. If you don't become relevant for the digital nation, for the digital natives, right, people who are consuming content like this, you become irrelevant. People will just forget that you exist. I mean, look at Nokia, right? What more can you say? And then we have this, right? I mean, we have a crazy world, right, where you can be seeing the most fantastic thing, right? But you're not paying attention, right? Because there's so many options. Right? If you're in marketing or advertising or branding, you know what I'm talking about, right? It is almost impossible for people to pay attention to you. Anything longer than 30 seconds is a big challenge, right? So it's a huge thing. We need to have mindshare, right, as brands to be successful. And then looking at this, the role of technology in our lives, right, that may make it harder or more difficult depending on which role you're in, but clearly it's this, right? It's hell then. Heaven or hell. You have to decide on what that is, because basically technology will be absolutely everywhere. And so it's very important to think about what that does, what I call man-machine, and I'm writing a book on this, and I just published a video. You can watch that at a film, actually, techversushuman.com. But this is the key topic. How do we interface with machines, with technology? And what happens to us? And I will tell you right now, this is actually a good thing for us. It's just that we have to be careful that it's not too much of a good thing, right? I mean, there's no escaping technology. You can move to Amish country in America, right? You could do that. You know the Amish that don't have technology? Even on the top of the Swiss mountain, you have technology. On Mount Everest, you can make a YouTube video. I was there the other day. No, just kidding. But you can do that, right? So technology is absolutely everywhere.
Hello. I am a fully automated investment advisory service. I can help you choose investments, monitor them, and rebalance your portfolio. I can do a lot of what humans can, except have a real conversation. If you'd like that, you can always speak to someone at Schwab.
Charles Schwab, $310 million invested in a robo-advisor. It turns financial advice into a software transaction. I mean, if you're looking at banking, just to give you a sort of a head view on this, some of you are in the banking business, right? Transfers, money transfers, payments, goes off to people with mobile devices and apps, right? Peer-to-peer loans replace your loans, right? This will replace your advisors. So that is a situation that we have to address, because clearly it's about the question, what is the value of banking in the future? I mean, every day goes by where you're seeing headlines like this, right? Everywhere all over the internet, will that be the new music business? This is a great thing from the MIT Technology Review from last week. Huh? That is the question. Will we ride on top of technology, or will it crush us? Or maybe you will be the crusher if you work for Google or Facebook or Baidu. That's a key question for us. So take a look at this chart. Most of you are not blue-collar workers, I gather, since you're Accenture alumni. You're over here, right? You know what the headline for this is? Non-routine cognitive jobs. Knowledge workers. You see where that curve is going? That is growing like crazy, and that's why we're here, right? That is has worked out great for us. But the near future will be this, right? Research shown from Oxford University, in the next 10 to 20 years, 58% of financial advisors will be replaced by robots and AI. Do you believe that? I think it's extremely likely on a certain level. Of course, that means we have to move up the food chain and become better. Right? We see headlines like this every day. Chinese company replacing 90% of the workers. Right? And here's a short clip on this that I think we find interesting. This is a video that's 17 minutes long. I will not show the whole thing, obviously. You can watch it online. It's called Humans Need Not Apply. It's depressing to watch, but it gives you a good idea of what the angle is. And here's a short clip from that.
When you think lawyer, it's easy to think of trials, but the bulk of lawyering is actually drafting legal documents, predicting the likely outcome and impact of lawsuits, and something called discovery, which is where boxes of paperwork gets dumped on the lawyers and they need to find the pattern or the one out-of-place transaction among it all. This can be bot work. Discovery, in particular, is already not a human job in many law firms. Not because there isn't paperwork to go through, there's more of it than ever.
Sorry about this, I have no idea why it's not actually playing the movie. That's probably because it's scary. Anyway, it was supposed to actually show you what he's talking about, but, you know, watch it on YouTube. But basically, if you're in the legal business, you know what I'm talking about, it's probably very hard to replace a lawyer, a real lawyer, a good lawyer, right? But legal discovery, fact-finding, predicting outcome of jury trials, looking at facts, right? What legal paralegals do today, is that possible? Absolutely. What will that do to the prices that lawyers can charge? Will it be like the music business where the margin is crunched? So I think if you're looking at this, I tend to think this is primarily 90% opportunity. Because what happens here is that we can focus on what really makes us human if we do so. Because competing with machines will be out of the question. And a lot of research on this shows basically what's happening is that this is a research from The Economist showing that the sophistication and automation will happen, but our employment will shift towards the right brain, creativity, social skills, negotiations, invention, entrepreneurship, these kind of things, right brain. So if you're talking to your kids about their future jobs, talk to them about the right brain. And this is, of course, going to have real impact on education. So the logic of work for us, you know, we're all still working for quite some time. We're not at the end of the workforce here, most of us, right? This used to be the old logic. You work, you produce, you have a safety net, right? That used to be the way that things work for our parents. Now you have this, right? The constant up and down between those phases, always learning new things. That's what our kids will live through. And then, of course, the safety net may shrink. In many ways, you could argue it may be a good thing if you have time off in between and learn something new, or if we have a basic income guarantee, as has been proposed by people. Different debate. We'll take all night if we get into that. But here's a reality check. You cannot possibly think of your business or your work or your customers as a machine. You have to treat the data and all that stuff in a machine-like way to understand that you have to be smart about that big data stuff, right? Clearly. But it should not lead to what I call machine thinking. For example, IBM Watson. Anybody from IBM here? Okay, I can just go ahead and... It's one of my clients, so I will talk about it anyway. But IBM Watson has a mechanism of where they're using sentiment analysis internally in organizations to figure out which ones of the workers would be dispensable in case you had to fire people. Looking at all the emails of when you come in, how much you have produced, how much you post on LinkedIn, who you talk to, the whole network, millions of data pieces. You push a button and say, which five people should I fire? And IBM sends out the pink slip. Right? I mean, this is already happening. Right? So if we think of it like this, I think we're losing the point of the fact that ultimately business is a human function. Right? It transcends data. So we have to keep that in mind when we talk about automation. Some people refer to this as reductionism. You may remember Descartes from the 17th century or so that has said that basically animals and people are really fancy machines. Right? That can be copied. Right? And in fact, he built an artificial duck to prove that you can copy animals. Right? So if we do that, it's a very bad idea, and technology kind of leads us to believe, for example, TripAdvisor, right? You've used TripAdvisor. You know TripAdvisor can be absolutely brilliant sometimes, and sometimes complete garbage. Right? It's interesting, but it's not all there is. So I would suggest to look at two things here. The future is about technology, algorithms, the Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, understanding stuff better, being more efficient. Clearly, that's happening. The other side of that future is the big opportunity is combining that with human value. I don't mean ethics or social responsibility, right? I mean having a touchable brand, having something you stand for. The other stuff is just part of that. Apple makes a great example of this. You know, Steve Jobs, rest in peace, said this in 2011, it's technology married with liberal arts. Married with the humanities that yields us the result that makes our hearts sing. And Apple is now selling 72,000 iPhones every minute. Every minute. Apple makes more money with apps than all of the Hollywood motion picture industry. With apps. Just the apps. So really what happens here, if you're looking at Apple Music was just launched. Apple Music says, yes, we're using a computer to make playlists, but we also hire 200 or so radio editors to create a human program. The future is about algorithm, technology, and humanism, right, to create value beyond this, technology and humanity. If you're looking at the future like a giant machine, you're looking in the wrong direction. This machine will happen. It will be important. You should invest there, right? Clearly, but... My good friend Isaac Asimov, futurist from a long time ago, said, I'm not a speed reader, I'm a speed understander. That is the future of business for me, is to understand situations, to respond creatively, to figure out a way forward based on the machines doing the speed reading. It's great if you can also be a speed reader. I like to speed read, right? But it's hard to do. So that's our unique human value. This slide is hard to see. I'll put it on the PDF later, but this kind of shows jobs that are going away. The red ones are the ones going away, and the green ones are new ones. It's very likely your kids will have jobs that aren't even invented yet. I mean, my kids already have jobs that haven't been invented yet, that weren't invented previously, I mean. Upskilling. Remember those two things, right? You want to be successful in the future? Upskilling, which means getting away from what robots can do, and right-braining. Right? Creativity, negotiation, design, innovation, transformation, discussion, understanding, empathy, all that stuff that machines can, for the time being, do yet. So successful business will be in those two segments. And I realize this is kind of a far stretch because it is essentially a schizophrenic situation. Right? You have to invest in all that stuff that we know about, and you have to understand it. Right? It takes the mind of an engineer, really, or a geek, to understand screens and software and artificial intelligence. But then you have to understand people. And the future is really about merging those two things, right? The intersection of those two things. And that's where value will be created. That's where purpose will be created. So let me move to the summary, and then we can have some questions if you like. First, you cannot wait and see. Wait and see means wait and die. And that is a certainty. Do you know how many companies will die in the next 5 years? Do you know how long companies used to hang around on the top 100 companies in the world? It used to be 50 years. Now the average for a company to last in the top 100 is 12 years. Because of the speed of exponential change. You have to expect exponential changes based on hyperconnectivity and technology. And you have to know what they are. You have to be aware of that. This is a crucial mission. Success means combining algorithms and what I call humorithms, human values. That's what makes a good brand, regardless of what business you're in. Take the holistic view of avoid reductionism. In terms of being a company, I think platform beats destinations. Interactions beat transactions. This is the funny part about customer empowerment. You know, we have roughly 3 billion people on the internet today. In 2020, it'll be 6.5 billion people. And you know that every person that connects to the internet becomes empowered by checking you out and comparing and driving the price down. That's basically what happens there. If you don't have interactions with your clients, if you're just looking for a transaction, that is a one-way street. You know, when I started working with the big record labels in the 10 years ago about how to save themselves from the internet, the first thing I said is you have to build a relationship with your audience. Right? You know what they said to me? The CEOs of these companies combined said, we don't give a shit about the relationship. We want to sell our music. And you know how many times I hear that from customers today? Who cares? They just buy our stuff. That doesn't work that way anymore, right? Interaction before transaction. And that's really what technology has brought to us. This is where you should invest: social, mobile, analytics, cloud, intelligence. Right? Money has to go there. Serious money has to go there. First emphasis is mobile. You know, 80% of the entire internet traffic will be mobile by 2020. Is your company mobile optimized? I mean, I work a little bit in tourism, and the other day I checked out hotels and tourist sites in Switzerland on the mobile. It was appalling, right? Like 2% of all of the websites were mobile optimized. The rest I couldn't see. I mean, you're missing out big time if you're not mobile optimized. Mindshare and purpose is everything. Marketing becomes content. The brand becomes the message. And lastly, be more human to be indispensable. You know, it's kind of ironic. 20 years ago, business school logic says, if you're human, you're dispensable, right? Because you're not perfect. You're not productive if you don't work as well as a machine would. Today, we have to realize that if we work like a machine, we will become dispensable. It's the opposite, actually. I think that's very hopeful, even though it will leave us questioning sometimes as to whether there will be enough jobs for everyone, clearly, in the near future. But anyway, as I said before, I'm 90% optimistic. The thing that's best about the future is that when you understand it, you can shape it. And I think Peter Drucker